Grace to you and peace from God who is, who was, and who is to come. Amen. We're dealing this morning with a couple of really great Bible stories, but there's so much going on in them that I think we need to, as one of my seminary teachers would say, we need to unpack them. So we're going to start with our 2 Kings reading. Naaman is the general of the army of Aram. Aram is more or less modern-day Syria, so it's to the north and slightly east of present-day Israel. And Aram is an enemy of the kingdoms of Israel and Judah. Naaman has leprosy. Now, in biblical times, to be diagnosed with leprosy might mean that you have what we know as Hansen's disease, where your nerves die, your flesh rots, your digits fall off. Excuse me, but it could also be a case of really bad acne or psoriasis, a birthmark, or even an overabundance of freckles. We don't know to what degree Naaman suffers leprosy. All that we do know is that one of his wife's servants is a young Hebrew girl, and this young woman tells Naaman's wife that there's a prophet back in her home country who could heal Naaman. So our reading skips over a bunch of the intervening verses that explain exactly how this is arranged. Go home, read those verses in chapter 5. It's short. It almost kind of reads a little bit like a sitcom. But long story short, Naaman ends up in front of the home of Elisha the prophet. Now remember, Naaman is a military man. He is accustomed to giving orders and being obeyed, as well as receiving orders and doing what he is told. He is also a commander, so he knows that he is accustomed to being treated deferentially. We don't know exactly what Naaman is expecting when he shows up at Elisha's home. He says that he expects Elisha to wave his hand over him. Judging by the reaction that we do get, we figure that he was expecting to be ushered into the presence, inside the home and into the presence of the prophet, to be given the respect and honor due someone of his stature, because remember, after all, he is a representative of his king, and then probably either be instantly healed or possibly be given some heroic, majestic, and awe-inspiring act in order to prove his worthiness to be healed. Instead, what happens is that he's greeted not by the prophet, not by the man that he's come to see, not by the representative of his enemy's king. No, he's greeted by some lackey, some messenger of the messenger of God. Now, Naaman is accustomed to respect. He is used to being paid attention to. And this unnamed spokesperson, who's not even the prophet himself, but rather an underling of the underling of his enemy's king, this subordinate tells him, Naaman, this mighty military commander, to go wash in the river like a commoner. Are you kidding? I mean, I can almost hear him scream, "Do you not comprehend who I am?" Now, let's compare Naaman's story with what we heard in Luke's gospel. Jesus is on his way to Jerusalem. Well, actually, there's like 10 chapters in Luke's gospel where Jesus is traveling to Jerusalem. At this point in the story, Jesus is north of Jerusalem, somewhere between Samaria and Galilee. So he's in modern-day northern Israel, actually pretty much in the same general geographic area as our first reading. And while he's there, he's approached by this group of lepers. Now, we need to remember as well, in New Testament times, lepers were not allowed in cities because, you know, people were afraid, oh, you know, I'm going to catch leprosy. So they were banned and they had to live out in the wilderness. And so they oftentimes banded together, right? Safety in numbers. This group approaches Jesus and his gang as they're coming along. They apparently know who Jesus is because they called him by name. Jesus, have mercy on us. They're probably asking for alms, you know, money or food, food, possibly some clothing. Maybe they were asking for Jesus to heal them, but there really just aren't enough clues in our gospel story to know that for certain. All that we know for sure, though, is that instead of giving them money or food or clothing, Jesus tells them to go present themselves to the priest, which might sound to us like he's trying to blow them off, but really they needed to go to the priest because once you've been declared a leper, you need to have approval of the priest to be declared clean in order to reintegrate back into everyday life. So on their way to go see the priest at the local synagogue, they realize, whoa, hey, we're healed. And once they've been made whole, they can reintegrate themselves into normal society. They can strive to live a normal life. They can go back to their families. And they begin to rejoice. Which one is it, though, that returns and very specifically seeks out Jesus to give him thanks? It's a Samaritan. Now, it's a little difficult for us 21st century North Americans to really comprehend how Israelites felt about Samaritans. I think I've come up with an example. To first century Israelites, the Samaritans were like the illegal Muslim immigrant. So that a Samaritan was hanging around with a bunch of Israelite lepers was in itself just goes to show you how bad life was for lepers in the first century. Kind of like a Steelers fan being surrounded by a bunch of Eagles fans, but in a really negative way. But the only person that come, not that I know anybody who's a strong Steelers fan, but the only person who comes back to Jesus to show his appreciation is this Samaritan. And Jesus, in what I really hope was a snarky tone of voice, says basically, what? Weren't there 10 of you? Where's everybody else? Now, maybe if we're feeling generous, we can say that the former lepers were so excited about being reunited with their families that they headed home directly. Possibly they continued on to go to the priest to get the official clean designation. But it's only the Samaritan who comes back to give Jesus thanks. Really a big contrast there, isn't it, between Naaman, commander of the army, and some lousy Samaritan. Grace and mercy is shown to both of them, and really not much is asked of either of them to go and do. I mean, Naaman, all he had to do was go wash in the river. The Samaritan just had to go down and show himself to the priest. The Samaritan does what he's told. Naaman, the military man, the guy whose DNA is programmed to obey, he's the one who bolts when he hears his orders. He is a commander in the army. He is an Aramean. Naaman is important. Who is this inferior, low-ranking, petty prophet think that he doesn't have to go out and greet Naaman himself and then has the gall to tell him to go wash himself in some stinking Israeli river. Now, fortunately, Naaman does eventually listen to one of his own underlings, who convinces him, Father, if the prophet had commanded you to go do something difficult, would you not have done it? How much more than when all he said was go wash and be clean? So Naaman goes down to the river, I'm sure grumbling and moaning and complaining the entire way. And he washes in the river. And when he comes up for the seventh time, he realizes that his flesh has been restored. He's got the skin of a young boy, and he's clean. Now, to give him credit, he does return to Elisha's home and acknowledges the grace and mercy that has been shown to him. Here's what struck me, though, as I was reading these lessons for this week. I really think that all of us are the lepers. Not with the actual skin stuff, but in a spiritual sense. All of us, we don't like to hear what Paul has to say in his letter to the Romans when he wrote, all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. All too often, I think, we act like Naaman. Too often when we're presented with God's grace, we are proud, arrogant, rude, self-important. Too often when I'm criticized or given an opinion that I don't care for, I want to respond with, I am called an ordained minister in the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, and I have been for over 20 years. I have served 4 different congregations in 3 different states. I have a master's degree. I know stuff. Too often, I want to be like Naaman and prove my worthiness. Too often, I know that I am right, and all my critics are absolutely wrong. So why can't I be more like that Samaritan, that illegal Muslim immigrant, who does what Jesus tells him without asking why, without getting arrogant or nasty or rude? Why is it that we always feel like we need to be right? Why do we struggle with accepting God's grace and love and forgiveness? And why are we all too often willing to take out our frustrations on one another? Why are we all so bad at receiving mercy? Amen.